Welcome to Empowered, Mind-Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out.
Hi, everyone. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Ilse Dora Laker, the first North American German New Medicine educator and consultant trained by the founder of German New Medicine, Dr. Reich Geard Hammer. She carries the passion of German New Medicine and is dedicated to the teachings of Dr. Hammer, bringing the information forward so that we can have a meaningful shift to what we perceive as disease. How an emotional shock or trauma, also known as biological shock, has immediate effects on the brain and the corresponding organ. Welcome, Ilse Dora.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Ilse Dora, I thought we'd start the conversation out with Dr. Hammer's own story and how he, you know, had a traumatic shock with the death of his son and later got cancer and then connected the trauma to what his physical symptoms were. And that was really the start of him understanding how much emotional trauma and shock affect our physical body. So if you'd start with that story, that would be awesome.
Well, it was in 1978, and Dr. Hammer's son and his daughter were on a school trip in the summer, but actually it was in September. And this trip involved three private yachts, and they went to the Isle of Cavallo, so just off of Corsica. And on the last night of this school trip, all the students and the chaperones were at a fish restaurant. And of course, they're in the middle of the Mediterranean, right? So they were in this restaurant, and one of the other guests was the Italian Crown Prince, Victor Emmanuel, his wife, and some bodyguards, and I imagine some friends. And one of the chaperones with this group of students was also known to the prince. As a matter of fact, he was a medical doctor, and his father was actually the family physician to Victor Emmanuel's father, the deposed king of Italy. So they knew each other, but, you know, kids being kids, they were a bit rowdy, and they went into the wee hours of the night, but they kept getting dirty looks from the prince. So Dr. Benda was his name. He thought that perhaps the prince thought that the kids were having a laugh at his expense. But anyway, when the party broke up, he noticed that they were also followed by the prince and his entourage. They had an open Jeep, lights blaring, followed them right back to where they were, where the yachts were moored. And then he drove on. But about 20 minutes after everyone had gone to their cabins, Dr. Benda heard some noise on the deck, and he realized that there was something wrong. So he went up to see what was going on, and he saw that there were some air tanks actually strewn on the deck, and they were turned open. Of course, this is dangerous. So he scrambled to turn them off, and at that moment he saw that the Italian Crown Prince was sitting at the back of the boat in a dinghy, and he had this massive weapon pointed at him. So, and then all of a sudden the prince started screaming, and he said, "And this is for trying to steal my yacht," and he's fired some shots. So, of course, Dr. Benda jumped into the water trying to get to safety. But in the meanwhile, they heard some screams, help me, I've been shot. And this was Dr. Hammer's son, Dirk. So when all the commotion died down, they found Dirk had been shot in the abdomen and the upper thigh. And he was mortally wounded at that time. He had lost a lot of blood and was unconscious. So they had to wait until the next day before they were able to airlift him to Marseille. And of course, Dr. Hammer and his wife were there attending. They were living in Italy at the time. They had a very thriving practice in Italy. Both he and his wife were physicians. And so they attended to their son for the next 3 months. But towards the end of this three-month period, after countless surgeries, I believe it was 16 surgeries, and he was on dialysis, literally from the moment that he was airlifted to the hospital. He was clinically dead, but they had to revive him, of course. And 3 months later, he died in Dr. Hammer's arms. But there was a lot more involved where this was concerned, because apparently Dr. Hammer found out that there were some orders given to speed up the process of Dirk's demise. And these orders came apparently from the Italian Crown Prince. So, of course, both Dr. Hammer and his wife suffered terribly over this. And Dr. Hammer developed a testicular cancer, was diagnosed 3 months after Dirk died in December. His wife developed a breast cancer a short time after that. But yes, at that time, of course, Dr. Hammer is a traditionally trained medical doctor. So, but, you know, when I first met him, I knew his history already. And of course, this is in 1999. And when I first met him, I asked him, I said, why didn't you have chemotherapy? And he said, well, you know, Isidora, I don't know any medical doctors that would subject themselves or their family to that kind of treatment. Of course, he had surgery. He had the testicular cancer removed. And he was given literally a 1% chance of surviving this because he developed a peritoneal infection. And he was quite critically ill at that time. So, but during his hospital stay, he had a visitor on behalf of the Italian Crown Prince saying that if he decided to pursue this, in other words, legally hold him accountable for the death of his son, that they would destroy his life, destroy his practice, destroy his finances. And of course, they ended up doing just that because Dr. Hammer went after him. So it was a couple of years later, after he survived this horrific ordeal, that Dr. Hammer tried to get his life together. And he took a position as head internist of a gynecological oncology clinic that was associated with the University of Munich. And there, he took the opportunity to question his patients whether or not they had any traumatic events in their lives that preceded the onset of their cancer. And there were 170 patients in his care at that time. And in every situation, they all had a traumatic event. Of course, he also had the reproductive cancer, so it became quite evident to him that reproductive cancers had the same kind of traumatic event that preceded it. So that's how it began, and actually, he discovered the first. He discovered the first or two biological conflict during that period of time. And when the university head got wind of it, they decided to terminate his contract. So it was quite a horrific time in Dr. Hammer's life, but he kept forging forward without any kind of financial support, no money for research. And this is when he discovered the first biological law, the iron rule of cancer. And that simply states that it's a traumatic event that you did not anticipate that will develop into a serious illness. But then subsequently, he discovered that it takes a traumatic event to develop into all illnesses outside of poisoning. So this was quite momentous in medicine. And of course, Dr. Hammer was blocked everywhere he went. As soon as he came out with his discovery, they tried to block him. And in the end, there were about 12 attempts on his life. So they did their best to prevent Dr. Hammer's work from becoming noticed. However, we have the internet to thank for the German New Medicine to come into the limelight. And that's been pretty much since 2000.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible how, you know, whoever tries to block this information and for their own agenda and for their own wealth, perhaps, would block such information from coming forward that could help so many people.
Well, that's the way of the world. We know that now more than ever, I'm afraid. But, you know, we can look at the medicine historically, and we see this happening all of the time. There are obviously groups that have an agenda that do not want this kind of information out there. If you've ever read The Green Pharmacy, I'm sure most naturopaths have read that. You know, it's history repeating itself.
Yeah. Well, homeopathy has been under attack for over 100 years, so I'm very aware of that. So, Doctor, like, this is such beautiful information, because when we do feel trauma, you know how you're affected. You can't sleep. You feel the effect of the sadness, the grief, the shock in your body, and we all experience it differently. So what he discovered was that he actually took photographs of the brain and could see how the trauma affected different parts of the brain. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, this actually came a little bit later. I think it was in the first 18 months that he came across a CAT scan. This was a patient. He was working in emergency at that time. And the patient was brought in unconscious. And, of course, the protocol, if someone comes in unconscious, is that you do a CT of the brain to see if there's an injury or whatever. So they took a CT of this fellow that came in unconscious, and he had apparently had a heart attack. So when he got a hold of the CT, they noticed that there was a pocket of edema in exactly the area of the brain that they already knew was the heart rhythm center. So, yeah, it was quite amazing at that moment. He had that revelation that the psyche and the organ, in the moment of the trauma, everything was mediated by the brain. So it's psyche, brain, organ in a split second. And what we actually see on the brain at that particular moment is a target ring. That target ring is actually a sphere of activity. It's like a ball of activity. Of course, you know, we change the angle of the CT. Then, of course, we also still see that target ring configuration. But that sphere of activity is it triggers what is going on the organ. And of course, the moment that we have this biological shock, we call it a DHS, or Dr. Hammer called it a DHS in honor of his son, Dirk Hammer syndrome. But as soon as we have that biological shock, like you said, we have problems sleeping, we have poor appetite, we have cold extremities, and we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So anybody that wakes up 3 o'clock in the morning has got some stuff going on, right? So there can be weight loss. And of course, we are completely focused on that particular issue. So we're encompassed by it day and night. Now, we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning for a reason, and that's really at dawn. And that's to give us more waking hours to work out the conflict. So nature is really giving us an optimum chance to figure it out before we actually develop a physical issue. And of course, most of his research in the beginning was on cancers, but like I said, all diseases are triggered by a biological conflict. So we could be looking at arthritis, right? We could be looking at the sniffles, eye diseases, you name it, ovarian cancers, breast cancer, skin disease, a rash, hives, allergies. Everything has its origins in a biological shock.
Yeah, and of course, how we perceive it would be very individual, and how our body reacts to it would also depend on what, you know, what area of the brain was affected by our perception, and then what part organ in the body is affected. So it would be individual for each person.
Yes, it's the nature of the biological shock that will determine the part of the brain that is affected, and simultaneously which organ or which germ layer or tissue layer. You know, our organs are made up of three different kinds of germ layers or cell layers. And there are four different areas of the brain that control those different cell layers. You know, we have, for example, the bronchi. They are covered by the ectodermal germ layer, which is squamous epithelium, which is the same as our outer skin. You know, all the tubes in our bodies are covered by this ectodermal germ layer. So, and they behave according to what is going on in the cerebrum. So at the moment that we have a biological shock, the activity begins in the brain on a very specific relay that has control over that particular part of the organ. And then ulcerations will develop on that particular tissue. So as long as the individual is in conflict, the ulcerations will continue. But when we resolve the conflict, guess what happens? The repair phase kicks in. And this is when we will develop some inflammation, swelling, and this is when we will get our bronchial symptoms if the bronchi are affected. So we would develop a cough, or what we commonly call flu-like symptoms. And most of those symptoms usually last, you know, anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks, depending on the severity, and also depending on whether or not there was any fluid that had built up during that healing process. And that in itself is indicative of another conflict. But, like pneumonia, for example, there has to be an active conflict affecting the kidneys in order for there to be any kind of dramatic fluid buildup in any organ or in the cavity. So Dr. Hammer has absolutely made sense of all the disease processes pretty much known to man. And he came up with a wonderful tool that we use in the GNM now, and that is the scientific chart, where he outlines the name of the disease, the location in the brain where we see this activity, the nature of the conflict, how the conflict displays during the active phase on the physical level, and what to expect on the organic level in the healing phase when the body is trying to recover from this. And this goes for all diseases. So it's a wonderful tool. And if we decide to look up something, then, you know, we know what to expect rather than being in the dark all the time.
Yeah, amazing. And and cancer, when it actually shows up as a tumor, is actually the body in the healing phase?
Not exactly. There are we have most of our cancers diagnosed when we are in the healing phase. But when we have a certain part of the brain, the oldest part of the brain, the pons in the brainstem, in conflict activity, then this would give us a cancer type that is known as an adenocarcinoma. And these develop during the conflict active phase. So here we could be looking at a liver cancer, the liver parenchyma. We could be looking at a pancreatic cancer, the same in the body of the pancreas, a bowel cancer or a stomach cancer, the large curvature. Because, you know, these organs are all made up of different tissues. So we could also, in contrast to that, have a pancreatic cancer that develops out of the bile ducts, and that's a healing phase. And the same with a bile duct cancer in the liver. Again, it's a healing phase. So we have two different cellular structures in a lot of our organs, or most of our organs, that would present in different kinds of cancers. One would grow during the conflict activity, and another would grow when the conflict has been resolved. So it's about 60% of all of our diseases are pretty much already resolved when they begin to show up in our bodies.
Right. And instead of realizing what phase we're in, we tend to go into another panic and treat it with, you know, possibly drugs that cause more harm.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have so many questions because I know this medicine quite well, but I'm going to pass it to Carl. And if there's any outstanding questions, I'm going to come back. Thank you so much, Ilsidor.
Hi, Ilsidor. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
I was looking at some stuff before before the interview, and I had never heard of this way of looking at CAT scans to identify a place in the brain, and it's the brain is the organ that tells you where the disease is going to manifest. There's a few things. In my limited knowledge, I know that cancer is usually preceded by some sort of trauma within 2 years of the person showing signs of it. And I also know that lung cancer usually has a lot to do with an emotional trauma. So this all ties in with what you're saying. It's an emotional, it's an energetic, it's at the level of the psyche, which sort of, you know, supports the idea of energy medicine, where everything occurs on an energy plane and then manifests then in the physical. What struck me, and maybe we can talk a bit more about the technique, but what struck me in those CT scans was the actual incredible symmetry of the ring, which is actually a sphere.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, because you also did the analog of a water droplet creating ripples in a pond, but that's dynamic. They're moving out all the time. So does the size of that sphere or the rings that encircle that center point, do they change with the disease state? Or, you know, the number of rings. I'm getting more into the kind of the physics of what's going on there as something to interpret.
Well, if you want to know more about the physics, then I have a video that I did with Dr. Stefan Lanka recently, where he talks just about this manifestation. And there are chemical changes that occur on the brain at that particular moment. And I won't get into it because it's pretty complex. But when we actually have this biological shock, the brain takes that on immediately. It registers in a very specific area that is literally programmed to respond to that kind of a biological shock. So, and this is for every living creature. You know, we all have this mechanism. So if we look closely, it occurs throughout all of nature. But this target ring, as we are in the conflict active phase, this is when it will affect the organ. So like I said, if we have let's take, for example, a starvation conflict, then we will develop a liver cancer. And this would present as a nodule or several nodules on the liver. And they will grow as long as the conflict remains active. Now, on the level of the brain, what we have is a target ring that will be very, very clearly defined for that length of time. But as soon as the individual finds a solution to that conflict, this is when the changes will take place, both on the organ and on the level of the brain. So on the organ, what happens is that the tumor actually stops growing. And when we look at the brain, we see that the target ring is starting to break up. The energy is dispersing. Okay, so we see the chemical changes on the brain simultaneously as everything changes on the organ. So the wonderful thing about understanding this is that it does take the fear out of a diagnosis. I mean, it's a serious diagnosis, a liver cancer, right? That scares the living daylights out of most people. But it's quite reassuring knowing that when we look at a CAT scan of the brain and the target ring has been resolved. That means that the tumor has also stopped growing. So at that moment, though, the body does something amazing. It uses microbes to begin to degrade what had happened during the conflict active phase. So the body is already trying to normalize what happened on the organic level.
That's fantastic. So these rings, they depict a different type of tissue. The tissue within the brain is slightly different.
Well, chemically, the brain is on its own. It's not made up of any particular kind of germ layer as the organs are. But we have, as we evolved, we developed other parts of the brain. The oldest part of the brain is the pons of the brainstem. And then from there, we developed the cerebellum and then the cerebrum. And we have all of our tissues that developed along with those different areas of the brain as we developed. So each area of the brain has a different jurisdiction over a germ layer that developed as we evolved.
So, right. Yeah. I suppose what I was getting at is the actual, because I'm fascinated by the sphericity and the symmetry. And so that must reflect something in the tissue of the brain.
The target ring, there's a destruction of neurons during that time. Yes, of course.
And so it looks like you're looking down at maybe a nuclear bomb has been let off and you get these rings of different pressure zones or whatever. But in this case, it's biological, it's a chemical, slightly different change in the tissue. So I'm just fascinated by the sphericity of it.
It's not the change in the tissue as much as it is in the the neurons, and when the tissue on the brain begins to repair itself, then the connective tissue of the brain, which is known as glia or glia cells, will begin to attempt to correct what had happened during the conflict active phase. So we will see over a period of time a greater accumulation of these glial cells, which are commonly known as brain tumors.
Very interesting. And so is the CAT scan the only way to see these? I mean, because a CAT scan uses X-rays.
CAT scan picks up on this energy, as you called it, this energetic change on the brain. I've always thought it was some electromagnetic field, but the latest information from Dr. Lanka indicates that this is a biochemical change that occurs it's called fermentation, believe it or not, because the process takes place without oxygen. So this chemical change is also responsible for making the changes in the glia, not the glia, sorry, the neurons. And when this process changes over to the healing phase, then of course the repair mechanism attempts to reconnect all of these neurons that were destroyed during the conflict active phase. So we will see a lot of fluid in that area, and we will see some glia. And of course, this is misinterpreted as a disease in itself or as a metastatic process if the patient already has a cancer. So we've learned to reinterpret what is really going on the level of the brain in the context of what Dr. Hammer has discovered. So it's really quite extraordinary how it all ties together once you understand his five biological laws.
Can this tool be used to? You're saying it can be used to diagnose, but foretell? Somebody comes in, you do a CT, and you say you've got this. Is it predictive? Is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Well, we see all conflict activity, and we also see all healing phases. In the very beginning, I was very curious. I needed to know that this stuff was real. So I when my very first teacher of the new medicine, as it was called then, came to Canada to do some courses. I sponsored him to do courses here. And I had my GP give me a CT. So we sat down after lunch one day and put it up on the screen, and he proceeded to tell me my entire medical history. So, yeah, that's very validating. So he was able to tell me everything pretty much that I'd suffered from. And thankfully, they were all pretty much resolved. But, you know, it also confirmed a couple of things that I already suspected had their origins in a cancer, and that was a breast cancer, had a breast lump for many years, and also a very large melanoma. That his expression when he saw it, he said, "Formidable, Isadora." He was Belgian. So, yeah, and at that time, I already understood enough not to freak out about what I had developed. So eventually, I got rid of it altogether. It was quite large. It was about 5 centimeters in diameter.
Wow. Yeah.
So wow. I'm a walking G&M experiment. it's confirmed for me all the time.
So the doctor told you by looking at your CT scans, he could tell you your past history of certain. So these rings don't fully go away. They leave some sort of mark.
Yes.
And does that affect the body thereafter? Because we all change through our experiences. Maybe the artifact is a part of that.
And you know, there are some things that we actually see that register but never come to a disease process. And you know, the way I see it, and I see this more and more, and I used to wonder when I first started to look at CAT scans, why the client would say, "No, I've never had this." And then one day I addressed this with Dr. Hammer, and I said, "You know what? I think the first conflict just registers on the brain, but it's the second conflict that makes us sick." And he says, "You're absolutely right." But of course, I had to be working in this field for probably, I think, about 8 years before I came to that conclusion. But it's really quite amazing. It's like the universe is giving us a grace period, but when we fall into the same conflict, this is when we will develop a disease process. So we need to look a little bit deeper sometimes when we're working with people. If they come to me with a physical problem, with a serious disease, we have to figure out the origin, you know, and the origin could be even 10 years earlier or even prior, longer than 10 years. So it's a process of discovery. And I find that most people that are open to this, it's not just a process of discovery of the conflict, but it's also a process of self-discovery in many ways. Because we have to look inwards, you know, we have to look to see why we responded that way and why we carried it so long and why it's so important to us.
Yeah, and then there again, you're back at the level of the energy which precedes everything before it manifests. So you can't just operate at the physical level to deal with this. So you have to go back to the root cause.
Yes. But the thing is, we seem to also attract situations that would facilitate a resolution. You know, and I found this early on as well. And, you know, we see it in psychotherapy, for example. You know, people keep attracting similar personalities into their lives that would make them miserable. You know, women with breast cancer is always, if it's a partner issue, then they have a history of bad relationships with partners. And it's because they're ultimately trying to solve something. So it's a journey, really. It's a journey of self-discovery.
And even in those situations, those bad relationships, or repeatedly bad relationships, or in order to learn some, would something like that show up in the CAT scan?
Well, we see the physical response, and you know, in most cases in women, it does end up in a breast cancer, so a milk duct cancer of some sort. So when they ultimately resolve these separation issues, or it could be a sexual conflict. You know, suicide is the result of two sexual conflicts in opposing hemispheres, you know, in the cerebrum. So these are rejection conflicts that women can experience. But, you know, ultimately, it's part of being human, isn't it?
Yeah.
Made. It's just that we're getting to know really what our bodies do with our experience. What we develop is literally an expression of our experience.
Yes, and that ties into the very fact that we are creators, co-creators in this world, and that everything stems from energy, and through our consciousness, we affect the way it manifests. And this all ties in exactly with what you're saying.
Exactly. And, you know, it can manifest or it can resolve or dissolve just as quickly as it can manifest. This is what I've discovered, especially with chronic illnesses. You know, once we figure out the track that is keeping you in that holding pattern or is triggering you all the time, once you figure it out, it disappears. Literally, in minutes. It's quite extraordinary to observe.
And can the CAT scan data, the hard kind of cold scientific data, help someone to understand the origins of it, you know, on the emotional, energetic level?
Well, yes, absolutely, because, you know, it will register in a very specific area of the brain that will only react with that kind of conflict. So we already know in the case of a milk duct cancer, intraductal cancer, as it's called, that these are separation conflicts. And the same with an ovarian cancer. These are profound loss conflicts. So when we see this activity in the brain, we already know the nature of the conflict that is associated with it.
So this is not just a diagnostic tool for physical ailments, but it could also be used for the level of psychology or of the mind.
Absolutely right.
So yeah, fantastic.
But Dr. found that he's isolated different kinds of schizophrenias in the brain. It's very specific. We call them constellations. And it's simultaneous activity in both hemispheres of the brain. I just mentioned two sexual conflicts are responsible for suicide, right? Or suicide constellations, suicidal thoughts, bipolar disorder. It's really quite extraordinary what he has managed to discover in 35 years. It's vast. It changes everything.
This is fantastic. I know I can go down a number of different directions right now. You know, how does it operate with the COVID situation? There's a few other things, but I'm going to pass you on to Steve because I'm sure he's got some questions in that area, and hopefully we can get back and talk more. Thank you.
Hi, Isadora. Very nice to meet you. This is amazing stuff. I listened to the podcast you did with Jane, and I learned a lot. So I've been studying sort of more terrain theory, Royal Rife and Dr. Otto Warburg and stuff like that. And this is so intriguing. My brother is 63, and you know, he had no knowledge at all. Forget about a brain scan and possible traumas and stuff like that, but just me giving him a little bit of knowledge about how, you know, someone's son like Derek could be murdered by a certain force that doesn't really want certain knowledge out has sort of taken away his fear. And he's doing a bit of cleansing and terrain type detoxing and stuff like that. But so for someone with prostate cancer, your knowledge is incredible. Is there a pattern, and what would you expect my brother's CAT scan to look at, and what would the trauma be?
Well, we would look in the pons of the brain stem because this is a cancer that is of glandular origin, and there's a very specific area right dead center in the pons that relates to the prostate. So, of course, we have a left side and a right side of the prostate, depending on which side is affected with him, we would be able to clearly see that in the CT. we would be able to see whether or not the conflict is still active or whether or not it was resolved. So where these prostate cancers are concerned, because they are glandular in origin, they develop during the conflict activity. And when the conflict resolves, this is when usually the patient will develop some night sweats, which means that there are active microbes, the TB mycobacteria, that are actually degrading and trying to normalize the cells that had developed during the conflict active phase.
Wow.
Yeah. So if he's had any night sweats, then we know he's in the healing phase.
Oh, well, this is sort of makes a lot of sense because since he's been a child, he's had panic attacks, like even when he was three. And that's like fight or flight. And he's always in fight or flight. So this, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But just to understand the process, it seems like the CAT scan is done and the healing starts as soon as there's a distinction made to the patient of what the brain is telling. And
exactly. The moment that you resolve the conflict, you see, it's the psyche that rules. Okay. It's the brain and then the organ that reacts, but it's the psyche that rules. So the moment that you find a solution or you come to terms with something, this is when you would enter into the healing phase.
Wow. So my brother gets a scan. You read it, you tell him, and then the healing will manifest from there?
Well, sometimes it doesn't. You know, sometimes we need to investigate the real origin of what they had developed.
Okay.
And through a series of discussions, we see how the patient related to that situation at that particular moment. And of course, you know, I have to address tracks, which are reminders of what we experienced at that moment of the biological shock. Because when we have a biological shock, there are billions of bits of information going through our psyche at that moment. Of course, not everything registers. It's the most important things that register. And we could be looking at the senses, our sense of smell, sense of taste, something that we witnessed. You know, the visual track is one of the most insidious. And, you know, so it could have been associated with something we were eating at that moment. This is what allergies are all about, right? Something we smelled. It could be a person that was part of the scene of the crime, as I like to call it, because, you know, we experience it as such. We go into fight or flight, right?
That makes so much sense.
So all the important bits of information register, and they can be potential tracks. Now, it's also important to understand that because we are emotional beings, the emotion registers as well. So the emotion can also become a track. So, yeah, there are a lot of things that we need to unravel. But, you know, when we first begin to discuss what actually happened at that moment and how it was perceived, we already have a very, very good piece of the puzzle. And then on, it's a matter of observing, you know, how are you reacting in this situation? What is the reminder? What set you back?
Interesting.
And the more we do this, the less we're affected by it. And that's the amazing thing. You know, it's like we become desensitized to the tracks the more we observe ourselves falling into it.
Yeah. It's sort of logical that as soon as you're told it, maybe it was this, it's a release.
Exactly. And a lot of people say it feels like a release. And, you know, when a therapist is closely connected with the patient, when you're working and you have that release, you both feel it. That's the extraordinary thing. I feel the waves of the release when I'm working with someone. So, yes, energetic, absolutely.
It's amazing because, like, even if you're at a job and you hate it, the day you quit and make that decision and the day you leave, it's like, you know, and, well, you know, Carl is big on water. I don't know if it's true, but technically, I think scientifically, we're 75% water. Mm-hmm. Water's programmable. Our minds are programmable. The there's a lot of toxins in the world. I mean, glyphosate is known to do untold damage to cell function and stuff like that. How much of this incorporates both maybe even inner child work or terrain cleansing or nothing at all?
Well, I think everyone has a piece of the puzzle, but we have to understand the biological mechanism to be able to even effectively use those different kinds of therapies. Okay, I think eventually, and I see that it's already happening. Mm-hmm. We have to understand all of our modalities and all of our methodologies within the context of Dr. Hammer's findings. Okay. That way, everything will make sense. Like I said, everyone has a piece of the puzzle, and you know, we're all doing valid work, but how does it fit into the five biological laws?
Yes. And I haven't boned up, so I apologize. But I mean, it's all incredibly fascinating. It makes total sense. So, but who would have thought a CAT scan could reveal such unbelievable information?
And, you know, the technology is changing. We also have the MRI where we do brain scans using that technology. But the MRI only picks up on water molecules. So the CT picks up on different energies, I think, and different changes, structural changes on the brain. Now, there's a new technology that is emerging. It's called an MRT, magnetic resonance tomography. And apparently that is also quite good at understanding the different phases that occur on the brain, whether or not you're in an active phase or whether or not you're still in a healing phase. So, so we have to go along with the new technology and see how it all fits in with what Dr. Hammer discovered.
That's really, really fascinating. I'm going to get more involved and bone up. And it's the last thing I'll say before I pass you to Grace is it never ceases to amaze me, as much as I know about the mechanisms of control and inversion and perversion of reality in this earthly experience, that, you know, Dr. Hammer, not only did he have his son murdered, but he had his medical license taken away, and he was doing nothing but good and on a trajectory of new information and a path that could help people. And, you know, this is part of what we do, is we try and alert people that they're being lied to and they're being misinformed, and their fear factor is deliberately elevated so that they don't have answers and they can't make sense of what's going on, and they rely on a system that doesn't support them or want to heal them. So I found that, you know, even though I know it sort of was such a bummer to hear that he was attacked like that after everything.
35 years. And ultimately, I believe what took him out was the final decline of having his license reinstated. And that happened just a few weeks prior to his passing in 2017. So he had to come to terms with that at that moment, because he only had an opportunity every 10 years to have his license reinstated. And this was the nails in the coffin, if you ask me.
There's the list is, I know I could name Brzezinski, Harry Hoxie, Renee Case. I mean, I could go on about doctors who have been reversing disease and empowering people at the same time. And and they've been destroyed by the institutions and authorities in quotes, that are protecting us. But I'd love to chat more. I'm going to look into this and be more prepared next time. And thank you for everything you're doing. And I'll pass you to Grace.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Elsadora, thank you. And Jane, thank you for inviting Elsadora. I strongly concur to everyone's conversation, everyone's point of view. And that also, the conversation brings me also, brings a lot of reminder even from an indigenous point of view, because in an indigenous point of view, your behavior always matters. Mm-hmm. And how you behave, whether it's respect for your elders, respect for yourself, always there, always. And then they always say, you know, watch your behavior, because soon you'll be sick of this. Or, you know, if you're being behaving badly, it says, what are you sick of now? So always that. And so in all my practice, from basic nursing to holistic nursing, I always have that at the back of my mind to say, okay, what happened to this person before? And I believe that's also part of the Ayurvedic medicine, of the Chinese medicine, or all the ancient medicines, always going back before. And then that's when I was really happy that the functional medicine group kind of also points back to what happened. And one thing that I do remember is that the chronic conditions always refer to something emotional and something spiritual. Now the challenge, and I think there's no disagreement with that among all the practitioners, even Western doctors, I think, but the challenge is how do you apply that knowledge, that theoretical background to practicability? And then, but let me just say something about the license. And bless Dr. Hammer, and rest his soul wherever he is. So I say about the license because nowadays many nurses are threatened. Nurses and doctors are being threatened with their license. Mm-hmm. And there are brave doctors who, just like Dr. Cohen, who even before it was kind of taken away, he just relinquished it. He surrendered it. So sometimes when that's the key also, is when we get attached to something that maybe we think it is important for us to be able to speak our truth, then that's like, that may not go along with the German new medicine, because that becomes like a secondary, third, or whatever, you know, immediate factor trauma. So I hope that whoever is listening could start expanding more their imagination and their commitment, that it is not about the physical thing of a license or anything of that sort that makes you well, makes you healthy, makes you happy, makes you peaceful. So we can try. And it's interesting that in the Spanish, actually Spanish, but it's really like, if you approach a curandera, which is the indigenous practitioners, they will always say that the number one illness is fear. So when you have that fear, okay, so that fear. And then when I started learning quantum reflex analysis, and bless his heart, Dr. Marshall passed away already, but and that's the semi-kinesiological technique. And I resonated with it, Isadora, because when we are taught to examine from head to toe, because that governing vessel, and they said that you cannot fully get better if all your head points are not strong. And yeah, I resonated to it because many people don't have access to health insurance. Okay, and many doctors would not say, okay, let me do a CAT scan, or you can convince someone to have a CAT scan because of something outside the brain. You know what I'm saying? It's hard for them to connect that. Although people like Carl and, you know, Steve and all the people here with us, we all can connect to the brain. And it's interesting, Carl, check me if I'm wrong, but the kidneys, the liver, the lungs, the brain are the most saturated with water. And then going back to that ring, and I like that, really. I like that image. And so thanks for bringing that up. And then I believe that the magnetotomography is, they don't touch the brain when they examine that, right? Elsidora, it's not like an ECT. So it's an outside, and Bruce Lipton speaks of that, and other, you know, other health practitioners who knows now about frequency. So it's all outside. So so in all of this, it's fascinating that, you know, many physicians like him, and again, thank you for pursuing and continuing to teach this, because it's really great. And when you said it, it fits all the puzzle. So my I think my question would be for you, since you've been practicing this, what is the most challenge that you've had when the person cannot even own it? You know, when you said, it's easy to say, hey, I think this is what happened when you were a child, but you're already grown up. So what do you do with that? So what, and how do you like really make it available that it's for me? Because it's for me, it's all about own it, and then boom, things can work out, maybe, most probably.
Well, I think it depends on whether or not the patient comes to me of their own volition or if they're brought by someone else. If they're brought by someone else, I don't think they're ready for it. If they come of their own volition, they're already exploring something that is different from traditional medicine. So that means that they're already thinking at a different level. Their experience is at a different level. They're spiritually at a different level. They're willing to explore self to figure out the cause of their disease. You know, that I've always felt that Dr. Hammer's findings are going to lead us to a higher level of spiritual development because of what it implies. It says that a biological shock, which is a terrible experience, right? A biological shock, it's life-threatening in many cases, and this is why we have such strong physical responses. It's a very negative experience, and it touches the soul. You know, the first book that Dr. Hammer wrote was called Cancer, Disease of the Soul. The soul is the psyche. So it's that which responds to this biological shock. So we're always looking for answers once we have a biological shock. We attract experiences that will help us to facilitate a solution somehow. This is a spiritual process. This isn't just biology. It's a spiritual process, especially in humans, because we have the ability of higher thinking. We can rationalize. We can look at the spirit, whereas other mammals don't have that ability. They are subject simply to conflict activity and conflict resolution and what their body does with it. We're operating on a completely different level from that. Now, because of that, it also gives us the opportunity to develop more spiritually. I think because we have to look at taking responsibility for our actions. That's the first thing. If we don't make changes within ourselves, then we don't change spiritually. So sometimes an illness will force us into this position of self-introspection and soul-searching, if you will. And even in some very, very serious cases, where we were unable to facilitate a turnaround because they had developed this, that, and the other, and other things in the process of their cancer experience, we see that the soul leaves much lighter than they had when they were carrying the burden of all of this conflict. So this is a very deep spiritual process, and we have to appreciate that. You know, Dr. Hammer was a theologian. He had his doctorate in theology, so he understood all of this. And I think this is why he was probably so open to this concept of a biological shock affecting the physical body. He and his wife had a series of discussions before he actually got his position in Munich. And they both understood that it was the trauma they experienced around the death of their son that was responsible for the onset of their disease. So, you know, this is all meant to be. I think it's very timely that Dr. Hammer came onto the scene in the early 1980s And, you know, this it's given us an opportunity, especially in the crisis that we are going through right now. I have to tell you, if it wasn't for knowing the five biological laws, I wouldn't have been able to suss this out, that this was a scam right from the beginning. You know, I my heart pours out to people that still believe in the old paradigm that cannot differentiate between what is real and what is being perpetrated.
I can't wait when more of this, more of these therapies, more of these interventions will not be labeled anymore as alternative, but really the main treatment or interventions, because it is so true, everything that you have mentioned and Dr. Hammer have studied. It's even interesting that if I have to think about that relationship of the cancer of the testis that he has had, that boils down to creativity. And look what came out of his cancer is all this creative, you know, and became like the German new medicine. And that might have supported him to live many more years and share this, because that's, you know, so every part of the body boils down to it. And maybe at some point, you can also share to us, please, the different laws that he, you know, mentioned. Because what I was thinking also is I always try to imagine the cycles of the butterfly. And related also to what he discovered, that, you know, for, there's that trauma, biological trauma. So in the cycles of the butterfly, as we all know, it starts from an egg, and, you know, it goes to being a caterpillar, to the cocoon, and then to the butterfly. So all these are the phases of life and phases of health. Maybe one of the problems that we had is when we start labeling things as disease, instead of illness. And so we get into trouble with all many words instead of just all about the feeling and going through the process. So help us again to understand and teach us a little bit of the different laws, okay?
Okay, well, everything begins with this biological shock, which is the unanticipated event. You know, Dr. Hammer said it's like being struck by a bolt of lightning. And I agree with that. I've experienced that. But not everyone can connect with that. So we've had to use a different kind of language for them to understand what can happen at that moment. In other words, it's something you didn't expect to happen. And depending on the individual, some people experience this very deeply. And other people, they have a wall up straight away. They don't allow themselves to experience it as most people would experience it. So they remove themselves from that experience straight away. And that's why they can't connect with it as a bolt of lightning. So we have this unanticipated event. We go into the first phase. This is the law of two phases. The first phase of that is the conflict active phase. And here we are in the stress phase. We're in fight or flight. So we have all the stress phase symptoms. We can't eat. We can't sleep. We're concentrating only on that problem. We feel cold. We wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, some stress phases are never resolved. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get sick. It all depends on the part of the brain that was affected. Now, if we're talking about the old brain, like the pons of the brainstem, then we could potentially develop a cancer that grows during the conflict activity. But if it strikes a different area of the brain, like the cortex and the cerebrum, then we can live to be 100 during that conflict active phase. Now, nature has also given us the ability to downgrade these conflicts. Otherwise, we would just die of the stress. You know, so the conflict is downgraded over about 12 weeks, and it downgrades to a manageable level. Now, if we resolve this conflict, then if it's from the old brain, then the tumor that grew during the conflict active phase, it stops growing. And if we have the available microbes in our bodies, then those microbes will begin to degrade that mass. Now, if something affected the cortex, for example, where we have the milk ducts in the of the breast, in the sensory cortex of the brain, then the repair phase kicks in as soon as we resolve that conflict. And this is when we will have the tissue swelling. This is when the so-called nodule will form during the healing phase or the repair phase. Now, this will only grow to a certain extent because the conflict active phase and the effects of the healing phase are usually in balance. So, you know, it will only grow to a certain degree, and then it will also stop growing, and the body will attempt to degrade that. Now, the third biological law has to do with the ontogenetic system of tumors. And that's pretty much what I just explained. Some depending on the area of the brain that the conflict activity is located, that will develop into a tumor that will either grow during the conflict active phase or a tumor that will grow when the conflict is resolved. Now, the fourth biological law is really very important for us to understand microbial activity, because here what we're looking at is the affinity of certain microbes to different germ layers, in other words, different tissues. So anything to do with the old brain, the pons of the brainstem, will involve the oldest microbes. So here we're looking at evolution again. So the oldest microbes are TB mycobacterias or mycobacterias and fungi. So their job is to caseate and to degrade anything that developed during the conflict active phase. Then we have the cerebellum, which is the next addition to our brain, which is still part of the old brain. So it will make use of those microbes, not so much the fungi, but some forms of mycobacteria that are related to TB mycobacteria, and the oldest bacteria known to man. And again, these are used to degrade tumors. Now, as we evolve, we develop the cerebral medulla, or the white matter of the brain, and that has jurisdiction over our skeletal structure, the connective tissue, and joints, the muscles, everything that is involved with movement. So those tissues during the conflict active phase, they will degrade. They will necrotize. In other words, they will lose mass. But when we resolve the conflict, the newer addition to the microbial family, the other bacteria, they will help to restore that tissue. And here we could be looking at the lymph. We could be looking at the bones. So there will be microbes available to help to rebuild. Now, the newest addition to the brain is the cerebrum. And originally, Dr. Homer believed that this is where we had the control center for viruses. But he changed his mind over the years because there was no conclusive evidence that there were actually viruses. All we really saw underneath the microscope were antibodies or proteins, right? So, yes, it was when Dr. Homer and Dr. Lanka met in the year 2000 that Dr. Homer really took a much closer look at the so-called virus theory. And finally, he officially published in 2009 that there was no evidence that there was a virus. And all of the tissues that repaired in the healing phase did this on their own, but there were byproducts that they were able to isolate as a result of these healing phases known as antibodies or proteins. And this is what traditional medicine eventually called viruses. But as we know now, there really isn't such a thing as virus. As a virus, it has never been proven or isolated underneath an electron microscope. So the jury is still out on that. So it's very interesting the way it all fits in with Dr. Homer's biological findings. And of course, it was only through understanding the GNM and what Dr. Hamer discovered that I was able to understand that what happened at the beginning of 2000 could not possibly be happening, that this was orchestrated somehow.
I think we are all in agreement with that. One thing I know is I want to make sure that my brain is good. So that's always a challenge because, you know, as a child, you bump, you fall. So that's why traumas in my practice as quantum reflex analysis, that you always have a trauma, physical, mental, emotional, and there's always that interference field that goes from the brain to the kidney to the liver. So thank you so much. And there's one question from a follower or a viewer from Ireland. And he said, is there anyone in Ireland who practices GNM? Or I guess the other question is, if they are in different states or countries, where's the best place for them to go to?
Well, if you go to inquiry@gnmonlineseminars.com, we can direct you to someone qualified in your area.
Thank you so much. And I'll pass it on to anyone. I think Carl still has more questions. And Carl, by the way, that lady who asked about Ireland, he really had very good comments for you last time as well.
Oh, good. That's always good to hear. I'll find out who it is.
Grace, that totally cut out when Ilsadora was saying where to find people. So maybe there's another way we can make that clear. Like she went a little staccato there, so I don't think we could hear her.
Oh, if you go to my website, GNM Online Seminars, we have an inquiry. Just type in inquiry@gnmonlineseminars.com and ask us who the qualified practitioner is in your area. We can direct you.
When you were talking about, this crosses over with, I believe, another German form of medicine and related to homeopathy. And the principle, it's called the Sanum therapy. And it's based on this, it's related to pleomorphic theory and the terrain. But it basically says that we've evolved with two basic forms of fungi, Aspergillus and Mucor racemoris or something. I can't remember the names exactly. But when these get out of balance, they can become more aggressive depending on the terrain. But the principle of this is that you give remedies in potentized form based on this principle in order to bring these more aggressive elements within the body back to a more symbiotic relationship with the body. Because what happens is that they, when the terrain gets out of character, they become more aggressive. And this is all about bringing things back into balance, to bring it back down. And to continue on Grace's analogy of the butterfly, when the caterpillar goes into the cocoon, the caterpillar is completely dissolved into its basic constituents so that it can reform and come out again. So I see that as a way of taking care of imbalances where the body tries to break it back down so that it can start again, perhaps to be reborn. You know, the scripture, the old man should die that the new man it comes forth, that we should be carry our cross every day, that we may be able to be reborn. But I sort of see that in this as well. So I just wanted to mention the Sanum therapy, and it's about bringing things into balance, but they use homeopathic remedies based on bacteria and fungi and all these elements within the body to bring it into balance. So that might tie in with this whole thing. That was really what I was, I just wanted to say, because it's a fascinating subject. I'm wondering Because a CAT, if somebody wanted to get analyzed remotely using this, could someone get, I'm making it sound simple, get a CAT scan of their brain and send it to you or something? Would something like that work?
Well, I usually only use it with my clients. Years ago, I was working with some Brazilian doctors that sent me their CTs all the time. And it was like I was just working for them. So I stopped doing it for people that, you know, were curious kind of thing, or for other practitioners. But what I am doing now, I just use it in my practice. But what I am doing now is I have established an institute, the GNM Institute. It's a much longer name, but we'll just call it the GNM Institute for now, where I'm going to be teaching a certification level of GNM so that other people can begin to use these tools to help their patients. So that's in the future. I can't allow this to die with the first generation of Dr. Hommer students. You know, we've all learned how to read CTs for the most part, and it needs to be passed on so that, and it has to be done person to person. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, you can just put on a diagram or in a book and expect the individual to learn from that. It needs to be passed on from person to person. So the institute was necessary. So that will be the future. But as I said, I do still use this tool with my own clients, but I do discourage people sending them to me just for analysis, because that could get out of hand.
But yeah, I understand that can be sort of disconnected from the person.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's not like sending out a saliva sample and getting a reading on a biofeedback machine. It's not like that at all. We need to connect with the individual and to understand what we're seeing. And even so, for research purposes, that is very, very important, because we need to reconfirm Dr. Hommer's findings. So part of this institute that I am establishing will also involve the furthering of his research.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll pass you back to Greg, sir, whoever.
I had one more comment, and I just, because I study the unconscious mind and treat with homeopathy, I know that often circuits get developed in early childhood. And I wanted to comment that, you know, Dr. Hommer's was like a lightning bolt shock, an emotional shock that was very obvious. But sometimes, like Steve's brother, he says, you know, it's this constant anxiety and he doesn't know where it comes from. It can it be equally damaging eventually on the brain?
No. Anxiety is what we call a constellation in the GNM. In other words, it takes two areas of the brain to be simultaneously affected to present at least in that kind of a thing. So we're talking about the frontal lobe. Now, we know each relay also has a connection to the organ. But when both hemispheres are affected simultaneously, that means that whatever is going on the organic level has been downgraded to the point where there's no activity. So we just get the emotional response. That's nature taking care of us. But unfortunately, we do experience the anxiety. Now, once we begin to observe and understand the origin of the anxiety, we can control it and ultimately get rid of it altogether. But again, this is where a CT of the brain would be very helpful, because these tracks, you know, they also register. So there could be other areas of the brain that are simultaneously affected that would give us a clue as to the origin of the anxiety.
Right. And the origin could be in very early childhood, when a circuit developed and then it gets triggered by something in our environment constantly, right? And then, so it's like going backwards to try to
Well, I figured out early on that the majority of our conflicts occur in the first 20 years of our life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just when we have resurfacing of the conflict, or the conflict is triggered for the second time or opened up for the second time, that we actually do get the physical response.
Exactly.
And I believe the same applies for anxiety and any of these, what we call mental disorders or constellations. So, you know, the universe is generous. Otherwise, you know, if we responded immediately to all of these biological shocks, we wouldn't live to be older than 30. Mm-hmm. There had to have been a mechanism in place that would save us from that so that we would live longer.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And one final comment. I know in our conversation that metastasis was linked to the shock of diagnosis.
Yes.
So just for people to be aware of that, I think is really empowering.
Exactly. But, you know, for some people, it's frightening as well, especially if they just had a diagnosis. But again, you know, it's been my experience that it's not the first shock that will present in the future, it's the second shock. So, you know, even if people are newly diagnosed, they don't have to worry about that, because, you know, we work them through it. And once they really understand these biological principles, it really does take a great deal of stress away from them and what they're dealing with. You know, from there on, it's a matter of dealing with it on the right level. You know, and not just doing absolutely everything that is out there, because ultimately that's going to lead to our demise.
Exactly. Just to realize the effects is empowering, and it takes some of the pressure off at the same time, because you know then, oh, I'll deal with this and I'll be fine, right? Like, work through my stuff. Thank you, Ilsadora. It's so empowering to even realize the information and the connections, and I hope it helps so many people out there. Thank you for coming today and talking about German New Medicine.
It's been a pleasure.
And I'd like to thank the audience as well. Okay, thank you for always following, and please share this to, you know, your family, to your friends and loved ones. And Mabalus, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.